Part 20, Stephen. Chapter 39. Night has settled, moonless, and the landscape Stephen and Belle pass through on their drive north is a curtain of dark, jeweled with the solitary yard lights from isolated farmhouses. They've both been quiet a long time, a lot to process. Finally, Stephen says, "Her." Belle is behind the wheel. After a few moments pass, as if bringing herself out of her own deep thoughts, she replies, "What?" "I keep coming back to Katie and what that guy Orlok said back at your brother's house. When I told him that we thought someone wanted her dead, he said, 'Her?' It was a question, like he was surprised by the gender." "Katie's a man? Or maybe not a person at all." "What then?" "Let me look at the map again." He clicks on the overhead light and unfolds the map of Canada. "This spider web of lines," he says. "I suppose they could be oil pipelines. So what those guys said about a May 10th attack could be true. Think about all the uproar over production and transport here to the States. Keystone, Enbridge. Oil production is killing the environment in Canada. It's not hard to believe that some big protest action might happen." "I'm just pointing out once again that none of the lines go near the tar sands." "Okay, natural gas, maybe. Or what if it's routes for transporting something really lethal? Like spent nuclear fuel. Or maybe uranium ore. Doesn't Canada have huge reserves of that?" "Maybe. I don't know." Stephen turns the map over and stares at the bold black scrawl on the other side. "Kill Katie," he says out loud. He ponders a moment, then says, "All caps." "What?" Belle glances at him. "It's written in all caps." "So?" "Maybe it's an acronym." "For what?" "Let's see." Stephen pulls out his cell phone and searches for "Kill Katie." "Well?" Belle asks after a minute. "Hits for Kill Katie with a K, but nothing with a C." "Try just Katie." Stephen keys in that search term. "Here we go. Something in Canada." "What?" Stephen reads from his phone screen. "Katie, Canada's source for HIV and hepatitis C information." "Never mind." He goes back to the search page. "Centro Agronomico Tropical de Investigación y Enseñanza," he reads haltingly. "Something to do with agriculture in Central America, so probably not what we're looking for." He scrolls for a while, then shakes his head. "There are like 21 million results, seriously." He turns off the overhead light, and once again they find themselves in darkness. "Smuggling," Belle says. "Could that really be what the lines are about?" "He's your brother. What do you think?" She shakes her head. "Doesn't make sense." "Border Patrol, Canadian Security and Intelligence, and whoever all those men in black were at your brother's house, May 10th, that's just a few days away, Belle. Something big is going down and your brother's at the heart of it." "We have to find Lou," Belle says. "That's all there is to it." "Okay. He went to Canada, we know that. Did he come back?" "If he did, it wasn't to his house." "Or your parents' house. So where else? Does he have friends? Someone who could hide him?" "Probably, but I don't know who." "Okay, if he didn't come back, where could he be in Canada?" Stephen gets a call while Belle is thinking. It's Dross. "We have Dolores Morisseau. She's safe." thank God. What about Rainey and Henry? They got separated, but your dad's found them. They're both safe. We'll be flying them out in the morning. And the guys hunting them? We have one in custody, but he's not talking. The others are still out there. We'll keep looking. How about you? Anything to report? He fills her in on the events at Lou Morisot's home. We're on our way back to Bina, to Belle's parents' place. If we come up with anything, we'll let you know. After he's ended the call, he gives Belle the hopeful news. But we still have to find Lou, she says. Okay, like I said, if he's in Canada, do you have any idea where he could be hiding? Belle glances at him, and in the faint glow from the dashboard, he sees her smile. As a matter of fact, I do. They're driving along the western shore of Lake Mille Lacs, one of the largest lakes in the state. On a windy, moonlit night, the water would be a reflection of shattered moonbeams, a scatter of glittering diamonds on an ebony blanket. But there is no moon, and beside them is only a vast black emptiness, which Stephen stares at, as Belle explains. Those two guys from Canadian intelligence and whatever said Blue was in Winnipeg recently. I told you my father is from Canada. He comes from the Shoal Lake 40 Reserve, about 100 miles east of Winnipeg. We still have a house there. We used to go a lot when I was a kid, but not so much anymore, or at least I don't, law school and all. But my folks and Anton still go, and if Lou was looking for a place to hide, well, it's worth checking out, don't you think? Stephen looks away from the emptiness beside them, studies Belle's silhouette in the glow of the dashboard, sees her turn her hopeful face toward his. He feels a sudden ache, a nameless longing. Some of it is physical. Belle is attractive. Some of it is admiration. Belle is smart and committed to good causes. But it seems to come from a deeper place, an emptiness inside him waiting to be filled. I think, but he swallows what he really wants to say and instead says, sure. It's nearing midnight when they arrive in Bina. Belle has called ahead and Vernon and Minnie Morisot are up and waiting for them. Minnie has made tea and they sit around the kitchen table trying to make sense of things. Lou's always been a big player, Vernon says. But this time it looks like he's in over his head. Guns? Ammunition? Explosives? I don't believe it for a moment, Minnie says. That's not Lou. He's done so well in his real estate dealings. Why would he become involved in smuggling? They didn't say he's involved in the actual smuggling, Vernon clarifies, only that they believe he has important information. Did they mention May 10th? Stephen asks. Vernon shakes his head. Why? The guys who claimed to be from Canadian intelligence and security told us they believed activists are planning some kind of major disruption of oil pipelines. We think that might be the day.
Did they tell you how they know about Lou's involvement? Vernon asks.
They said they couldn't divulge that. So they could have been lying, Minnie says. A lot of that going around, Stephen says.
Lying about his involvement, or the smuggling, or what?
Vernon asks.
Before anyone can reply, the doorbell rings. Vernon glances at the clock on the kitchen wall. Awful late for a visit. They stand together and walk to the living room. Minnie goes to a front window, parts the curtains a crack.
Too dark. I can't see who it is. Turn on the porch light, Vernon.
When he does, Minnie says,
it's a young woman.
Anyone with her? Stephen asks.
Alone, as nearly as I can tell.
The doorbell rings again. Vernon opens the door to their visitor. Yes? She's still outside, and Stephen can't see her, but he hears her reply.
I'm looking for Lou Morisseau. I'm a friend.
He's not here.
Do you know where he might be?
Would you like to come in?
Thank you.
She appears to be in her late 20s or early 30s. She's native. Her eyes are brown, her hair dark as a raven's wing, the ridges of her cheekbones high and proud. She wears jeans and a jean jacket with a pattern of colorful feathers stitched across the front. She scans the gathering.
My name's Tanya, Tanya Baptiste. Like I said, I'm a friend of Lou.
Her eyes settle on Belle.
You must be Belle. He's told me a lot about you. What do you want with my son?
Minnie asks.
I need to talk to him, Tanya says. It's important.
Talk to him about what?
Vernon says. She hesitates, as if struggling with an important decision. Finally, she says,
Katie.